This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Millions of Muslims from across the globe are converging on the Iraqi holy city of Kerbala to commemorate Arbaeen. Foreign ministers of Iran and Turkey say both countries agreed to boost bilateral trade while eyeing trilateral cooperation with Saudi Arabia. And Ukraine reporting a drone strike on its southern Odessa region days after a major drone attack on a Russian airport in the Peskov region. This is News. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. A top story this hour, millions of Muslims from across the world converging on the city of Kerbala in Iraq to commemorate Arbaeen. That's the 40th day after martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam, and the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Our correspondent, Gisum Shamedi, is also taking part in the pilgrimage. She joined us earlier with details on the Arbaeen March this year.
We are about halfway to Kerbala now. We left Najaf. I told you that we are at pole 835. That is pretty much halfway through the route from Najaf to Kerbala. The people have been walking for about 2 to 2.5 days in order to reach here, and they still have the same amount of route to walk in order to arrive in Kerbala, hopefully in time for the Arbaeen funeral ceremonies that will be held at Imam Hussein's holy shrine, which is, of course, next to Hazrat Abbas's holy shrine. And that particular part is called Bayn al-Hamain, another very religious and important site where these pilgrims are hopeful to reach in time. We are expecting a very large number of people to gather in Bayn al-Hamain and Imam Hussein's holy shrine on Arbaeen itself. We do know that the numbers have been increasing steadily from about 11 to 15 million people converging on the holy sites on Arbaeen 10 years ago to a number that is now close to 27 million people.
In the meantime, Afghan Muslims are also joining the procession pilgrims to send a message of solidarity and resistance to the world. We have more in this next report.
Arbaeen is one of the largest religious gatherings in the world, commemorating the 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. People of various nationalities, including Afghans, are marching toward the holy city of Kerbala in Iraq.
I am one of those longing to walk to the holy shrine of Imam Hussein and his companions in Kerbala. I just registered in a caravan today. I can't wait for the arrival of Arbaeen and the chance to fulfill my dream of joining the march.
I am very glad that I'm going on this trip to Kerbala. I thank Iran and Iraq for facilitating the granting of our visas. We are all joining the Arbaeen march, and I pray that God blesses all lovers of Imam Hussein in this journey.
Religious experts say that Arbaeen is a demonstration of Shia Muslims' unity and their commitment to their sacred values. They believe it's not only a religious duty, but also a political statement.
Arbaeen is one of the most important and valuable occasions for freedom seekers and those who follow the school of Ashura. It's a way of showing their loyalty to the values and principles that Imam Hussein defended, such as justice, dignity, and freedom. It's also a way of resisting the tyranny and oppression that they face from arrogant powers.
According to experts, the participation of Shia Afghans in the Arbaeen March is proof of their resilience and devotion in the face of adversity and oppression. It also highlights their goal of preserving their religious identity and traditions. The Arbaeen March is a spiritual journey to the holy city of Kerbala. Afghan Muslims join pilgrims from other countries to renew their allegiance to Imam Hussein and his thoughts. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
It's time now for the news review. The Iranian and Turkish foreign ministers have held talks on strengthening bilateral ties in all possible fields.
In these talks, we discussed the implementation of the comprehensive plan for long-term cooperation between Iran and Turkey, which was agreed during President Erdogan's visit to Tehran a few months ago.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian made a comment in a presser after meeting with his Turkish counterpart in Tehran. He said that the two countries are trying to increase their trade volume to 30 billion euros annually, and they are currently halfway through. Amir Abdullahian said that both sides have agreed to hold a trilateral meeting with Saudi Arabia aimed at boosting economic, commercial, and investment cooperation. The two top diplomats also touched upon regional and international issues, such as the confrontation against the rise of Islamophobia. For his part, Hakan Fidan called for the improvement of bilateral ties through tangible mechanisms. He said that the two countries should fight terrorism in the region as powerful allies. Now, allow me to invite a couple of guests to discuss this. Fadi Zedi, professor at the University of Tehran, and joining me in Tehran, Onur Erim, is a public analyst in Istanbul. Now, Professor Izadi, tell us about the significance of Iran-Turkey relations, and you know well that, especially during the Raisi administration, the government is adamant on boosting ties with all countries, in particular the regional states. So how important is Tehran-Ankara relations?
I think the Raisi administration calls that having good relations with all Iran's neighbors. Turkey, obviously, is one of the neighbors that has had historically good relations with Iran, although there are some disagreements here and there, but generally, especially in economic exchanges, Iran and Turkey have been working very well with each other. A good portion of the discussions today based on the news conference was dedicated to economic issues. And given the fact that Iran and Saudi Arabia have normalized relations, the issue of having these three countries, all neighbors, work with each other on regional issues, not only on economic fronts, but also on security and political issues that come up in their trilateral relations, I think is a good idea. Turkey knows the value of having good relations with Iran, and I think Iran does the same. So although there are differences, occasionally the relations have actually improved in recent years, and I think as we go forward, that the level of economic cooperation will increase.
Okay, Onur, another aspect apart from bilateral cooperation. The two foreign ministers also discussed regional cooperation, like Tehran saying it's ready to help Turkey deal with the crisis in the Caucasus region, the problem with the Azerbaijan Republic, for instance. The three countries, Iran, Turkey, Azerbaijan, can sit together and deal with the issue. Also, there is investment and also further trade between Iran, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia. I want you to weigh in on that.
I mean, it's no secret that Turkey and Iran had had, you know, had its own, you know, fair share of differences in the past. And, you know, going forward, there also may be some more differences in the future. But this should in no way, shape or form, should really prevent either of the countries from cooperating on what they can. Whenever there is a issue being discussed that I'm involved, that concerns the region, be it the Middle East and even Southern Caucasus, I always give a very same point I always underline. In this region, especially Middle East, if you want something permanent, if you want something sustainable, you have to make sure both Turkey and Iran is on board. Being pretty much for the Middle East the only two nation states with an immense history by themselves and actually together, which had its good days and bad days, you do something without the concession of both Turkey and Iran, it will not be sustainable. So As I said, it's no secret that Turkey has had its issues or differences with Iran and vice versa, and it will probably continue to have on certain matters, but they should try to explore more and more ways on cooperation, not just for the bilateral relationship, but also for the regional improvements. I think if the two countries can work more and more together, it will benefit both countries, but even beyond that, it will actually benefit the region.
Okay. Professor Izadi, regarding the water rights, former Samir Abdullahian talked about the Aras water to be, distributed fairly, and they said that the experts would be meeting together to address the issue. Let's also speak about that a little bit.
The Middle East is facing a water crisis, and Iran is one of the countries in this part of the world that is suffering from lack of water. In some years, there are difficulties with actually providing enough water for the agricultural needs of the country. Turkey is doing relatively better. The climate of Turkey and the access to water is generally in a better shape. There are concerns with regard to water rights, whether it's between Iran and Turkey. Turkey and Iraq have their own issues, and we all live in the same neighborhood. So if Iraq is suffering from water shortages, that's going to affect Iran. In the last number of years, we have had sandstorms that are coming from the Iraqi side to Iran. And one of the reasons for these sandstorms, increased volume of these sandstorms, is the fact that not enough water is coming out of Turkey to Iraq. The problems, environmental problems of this region is going to affect all countries. And the best solution would be cooperation and discussions and, international law that is available on these issues. And as long as there's this tendency to cooperate, I think some of these outstanding issues will be resolved.
Okay. And regarding security issues, the two countries stress that they are ready to cooperate with one another. Turkey has its own concerns, and the Turkish foreign minister said that they know. Syria, for instance, knows exactly what Turkey wants. How could this security concerns on the part of Ankara be tackled?
The fact of the matter is the security concerns that Turkey has mostly have to do with the backlash of these concerns being affecting within Turkey. What happens outside of Turkey actually concerns Turkish government because of its backlash in domestic security problems. This is something that we cannot ever discuss the effect of this as much as in Turkey, in anywhere else in the region, be it Syria, be it Iraq, be it Iran. Mm-hmm. And I think Turkey has to find a way to convince all the neighbors, especially Iran, that there has to be much more emphasis on what is being rooted out of the region, but what is being as the end result creating a major security problems or have potentially creating a major security problems in Turkey. So I think Turkey has to make sure that it convinces all of the neighbors at this point, but starting with Iran, that there has to be much more emphasis on the roots of these problems, which are not within Turkey, but where the problem is actually, being sorted out, a problem for within domestic, security concerns. So, when it comes to talking about these, people do usually talk about it in the context of a regional problem, but hey, that regional problem seems to be more having an effect on the Turkish domestic issue than anywhere else. So this has to be one of those things that have to be taken a lot more seriously than it has been in the past by all the concerned countries in the region.
All right, appreciate that. Fuad Izzeddin, Tehran, and Onur Erim in Istanbul with their contribution. Moving on, after Israeli police injured scores of Eritrean migrants during a demonstration in Tel Aviv, Prime Minister Netanyahu now labeling them rioters and demanding their deportation.
Now, there remains a serious problem of the illegal infiltrators in southern Tel Aviv and other places, but what happened yesterday crossed the red line. This is rioting. This is bloodshed. It is savageness that we cannot accept. Therefore, the first thing that I'm doing is to wish a recovery to the policemen who were injured in the effort to restore order. We're seeking strong steps against the rioters, including the immediate expulsion of those who took part.
And Netanyahu says that the regime has already repatriated 12,000 African immigrants. On Saturday, Israeli forces violently clashed with Eritrean refugees protesting against their government. The troop used live fire and stun grenades against the ralliers. Some 160 people were injured, some of them critically. The regime has been under fire by rights groups for racism and discrimination against non-white individuals. Ukraine saying its southern Odessa region has come under attack by more than two dozen drones. The South Military Command says the attacks targeted the civil infrastructure in a port on the Danube River. The attacks left two people injured and caused a fire in the port area. The military did not specify which port was hit, but Ukrainian media reported blasts in the Reni port. Russia has yet to comment. That days after Ukraine said a major drone attack on a Russian airport in Peskov region destroyed two transport planes and seriously damaged two others. Okay, with that, we come to the end of this broadcast.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. in the limelight. Donald Trump inflated his net worth by as much as $2.2 billion in 1 year, lawyers for the New York Attorney General's office have alleged, as part of their civil fraud lawsuit against the former president. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump routinely overstated his net worth, sometimes by as much as $2 billion, during years when the actual values of his real estate holdings were far less than he claimed, according to a court filing on Wednesday, 30th of August, by the Office of the New York Attorney General, Letitia James. The Attorney General's office included the numbers in a motion for summary judgment that asked the court to resolve a civil fraud claim before the Attorney General's $250 million civil lawsuit against Donald Trump goes to trial. The former president, meanwhile, called his real estate portfolio the Mona Lisa of properties during an April deposition in the lawsuit, according to a transcript of the deposition that was made public on Wednesday. "We have properties that make money, but you can sell for many, many times because of the quality of the property, like a Turnberry in Scotland," Donald Trump said, according to the transcript. "I could sell that. That's like selling a painting. A painting on a wall that sells for $250 million and doesn't make income. It just sits on a wall, but it sells for numbers." Unlike his first deposition with Letitia James, during which Trump invoked his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination hundreds of times, the former president in the April deposition answered questions for hours about his real estate holdings, which he suggested are worth far more than what appeared on property valuations. I have some of the greatest pieces of property in the world, and they sell. As Mar-a-Lago, some of the things I own in Europe, some of the things I own in New York, even like at Trump Towers, 57th and 5th Avenue, is the best location," Trump said at the April 13th deposition at the Attorney General's office near Wall Street. "I have great assets," Trump claimed. Letitia James last year brought a $250 million lawsuit against Donald Trump, his children, and his company that accuses them of grossly inflating the former president's net worth by billions of dollars and cheating lenders and others with false and misleading financial statements. Donald Trump has insisted he has done nothing wrong and has attacked Letitia James, who is black, as racist. The trial is scheduled to begin in October. In 2014, Trump claimed on his statements of financial condition to be holding $6.7 billion in assets. But the Attorney General's office said in Wednesday, 30th of August, court filing, that figure overstated Trump's actual net worth that year by more than $2.2 billion. Based on the undisputed evidence, no trial is required for the court to determine that defendants presented grossly and materially inflated asset values in the SFCs and then used those SFCs repeatedly in business transactions to defraud banks and insurers, the court filing said. The Attorney General's filing on Wednesday, 30th of August, said Donald Trump valued his Florida Mar-a-Lago estate as if it could be sold as a private single-family residence for amounts ranging between $347 and $739 million. The court filing said those figures ignored limitations placed on how the property could be developed. During the same period, the property was assessed by Palm Beach County as having a market value based on its restricted use as a social club ranging between $18 and $27.6 million. The Attorney General's office also said Trump
tacked on an extra 15% to 30% brand premium to the value of many of his golf clubs and inflated the value of unsold condominium units he owned at Trump Park Avenue in New York City. The court filing said Trump valued rent-stabilized apartments as if they were not rent-stabilized and valued other unsold units in excess of current market value. Two apartments leased to Trump's daughter, Ivanka, were valued at amounts 2 to 3 times the price at which she had the contractual option of purchasing the units, the court filing said. Trump's legal team is expected to oppose the motion for summary judgment. In his April deposition released on Wednesday, Donald Trump said as president he turned over all but major business decisions to his adult children because he was too busy to run the company and he was concerned about potential conflicts of interest. He said he instructed Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump not to do any new real estate deals, only run the company's existing properties. CNN cable news network has also covered the same story. Donald Trump inflated his net worth by as much as $2.2 billion in 1 year, lawyers for the New York Attorney General's office have alleged as part of their civil fraud lawsuit against the former president, his adult sons, and the Trump Organization. Over a 10-year period, the Attorney General's office said, when it corrects the Trump financial statements for alleged misvaluations, it reduces Mr. Trump's net worth by between 17 and 39% in each year, or between $812 million to $2.2 billion, depending on the year. The $2.2 billion disparity came in 2014, the statement said. The new allegations were made in a partial summary judgment motion made public on Wednesday, 30th of August, by New York Attorney General Letitia James, a Democrat. Based on the undisputed evidence, no trial is required for the court to determine the defendants presented grossly and materially inflated asset values in the Statements of Financial Condition, SFCs, and then used those Statements of Financial Condition repeatedly in business transactions to defraud banks and insurers, the Attorney General's office wrote. Notwithstanding defendants' hoard of 13 experts, at the end of the day, this is a documents case, and the documents leave no shred of doubt that Donald Trump's statement of financial condition do not even remotely reflect the estimated current value of his assets as they would trade between well-informed market participants. In a newly released deposition from the case, Donald Trump testified that he had very little, if any, involvement in putting the financial statements together. Trump's lawyers responded with a court filing arguing that the case should be dismissed, asserting that the Trump Organization's financial statements were not misleading. The Attorney General's office said their valuation and accounting experts determined that Mr. Trump's net worth in any year between 2011 and 2021 would be no more than $2.6 billion, rather than the stated net worth of up to $6.1 billion. And likely considerably less if his properties were actually valued in full-blown professional appraisals. Letitia James's office is asking the judge to find that Donald Trump and others made false or misleading financial statements from 2011 to 2021 and benefited from inflating his assets by receiving favorable loan terms and insurance rates. The judge is not expected to rule on the motions until just before the trial.
Your horse returns to Al Camp Riderless.
أزور سيدي ومولاي ومعتمدي ورجاي.
The ocean of dua.
الإمام الحسين عليه السلام زيارة
to fend for ourselves. Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyaratu Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyaratu al-Ashura. So stay with us.
فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثأرك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this part of Ziyaratu al-Ashura. فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثارك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله. Therefore, I ask Allah who venerated your station and honored me through you to provide me the succor to avenge for your blood with a supported leader from the family of Muhammad. May Allah pour down his mercy on him and his progeny. In this regard, we said that it is one of the advantages of reciting Ziyaratu al-Ashura daily that it awakens the human soul. It prepares the soul, and of course it prepares the human beings for the reappearance of our 12th Imam. It enables us to pledge loyalty to the Imam of the time, and this is what constantly facilitates murabata and adhering to the Imam during his absence. We said that the concept of murabata, and this word specifically in Islamic law and jurisprudence, is employed for those warriors who adhere to the frontiers of a Muslim country. And we said that based on our traditions, guarding the frontiers, or ribat, is reported to be 3 days at least and 40 days at most. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said, "الرِّبَاطُ ثَلَاثَةُ أَيَّامٍ." Guarding the frontiers is for 3 days, وَأَكْثَرُهُ أَرْبَعُونَ يَوْمًا, and the longest duration is 40 days. فَإِذَا جَاوَزَ ذَلِكَ فَهُوَ جِهَادٌ. However, if it exceeds that limit, that 40 days, then it is considered as jihad, and jihad, we all know, it is war in the way of the Almighty Allah. Now, there is another kind of murabata to which the Holy Quran invites the believers. The Holy Quran says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِصْبِرُوا وَصَابِرُوا وَرَابِطُوا وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ. O you who have faith, be patient, stand firm, and be adherent. رَابِطُوا وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ, and be wary of Allah, so that you may be felicitous. In this regard, Buraid ibn Muawiyah is reported to have said, Abu Ja'far Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir alayhi salam said about Allah's words, O you who have brought faith, be patient, stand firm, and be adherent. Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu sabiru wa sabiru wa rabitu. He said, that it means be patient in performing the obligatory acts. Stand firm against your enemy and adhere to your awaited imam. And adhering to the awaited imam, alayhi salam, alludes to the awaiter's state of preparation, to his state of harmony and steadfastness. The one who has not yet prepared himself to rise with the imam of the time has not yet reached the frontiers to safeguard the same. Ribat, or adhering to the frontiers of a Muslim country for the protection of that country, only makes sense when one has deciphered the frontiers of a Muslim country, resolved to station oneself there, and has practically stationed oneself there. So this is the true meaning of ribat.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies, it clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates him, he understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So, dear listeners, we said that the point is, reciting Ziyaratul Ashura on a daily basis awakens the human soul, prepares the soil, and it enables the reciter, the Zair, to constantly pledge loyalty to the Imam of time, and this is what facilitates Murabata. Regarding Murabata, we said that there is another kind of Murabata which the Holy Quran invites the believers to, and this is the point. This is what we're discussing here. Adhering to the awaited imam of our time alludes to the awaiter's state of preparation, his harmony, his steadfastness. That's why the Holy Quran says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا اصْبِرُوا وَصَابِرُوا وَرَابِطُوا. Be patient, stand firm, and be adherent. رَابِطُوا. And the ribat spoken about in this verse is not simple. It entails great struggle. That's why the verse says, اصبروا وصابروا ورابطوا. Before that ribat, before that fighting against the enemy, before that standing fast and steady, you need to اصبروا. You need to be patient. You need to stand firm. And then it is the only chance of رابطوا. Then it is the time for you to be adherent. So it is not simple. It has great struggle therein, and it is a ribat that transpires within the soul of the human being. It forms the very foundation of ribat in the world of phenomena. This is what we will also discuss in the next episode. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
تلم الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The National Council for the Safeguard of the Homeland, CNSP, which is now in power in Niger, has prohibited activities of international organizations, including the UN agencies in military zones. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media website and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted the military leaders in Niger who seized power in July have barred United Nations agencies, non-governmental organizations, and other international agencies from working in its military operation zones, the Interior Ministry announced recently. The directive comes in response to the current security situation and the ongoing operational engagement of the Nigerian Armed Forces, the ministry said in a statement aired on national television and reported by local media. All activities and/or movements of the organizations in the zones of operations are temporarily suspended, the statement said, without specifying the affected regions. The UN pledged days after the military takeover to remain engaged and committed amid the crisis in Niger, where it said 3.3 million people are food insecure. In July, UN Acting Resident Coordinator Nicole Cassi expressed concern about the temporary suspension of the organization's humanitarian air service flights after the leaders closed Niger's airspace. Last month, Niger's new military rulers announced the cancellation of a number of military agreements with France, which has some 1,500 troops stationed in Niamey. However, Paris has refused to withdraw its forces, arguing that the cooperation agreements were signed with the legitimate authorities of its former colony. The French government has repeatedly denied Niger's new rulers' legitimacy and has declined to comply with their directives, including a recent demand that the French ambassador leave Niamey within 48 hours. The military leaders are also at odds with the West African regional bloc, ECOWAS, which has taken a tough stance, threatening armed action if its desired diplomatic efforts to restore civilian rule to the country fail. In a statement issued recently, the regional authority reiterated its call for the military leaders to restore democratic order in the uranium-rich landlocked country, emphasizing its opposition to a proposed 3-year transition period. It added, "The demand of the authority of ECOWAS heads of state and government is clear. The military authorities in Niger must restore constitutional order immediately by liberating and reinstating H.E. Excellency President Mohamed Bazoum." According to Anadolu Agency, Niger's military administration recently cut off water and electricity to the French embassy in the capital Niamey, with no food deliveries allowed, multiple reports on social media said recently. The country's leadership has also taken similar action at the French consulate in Zinder, the report said. The president of the National Support Committee for the National Council for the Safeguarding of the Country, CNSP, El Issa Hassoumi Bouremia, has asked all partners of the French bases in Niger to suspend all water and electricity supplies and food products, said the reports. In addition, any partners who continue to help the French in the process of supplying the goods and services will be considered enemies of the sovereign people, the reports added. The reports came after a 2-day deadline given by the military administration to the French ambassador to leave the country expired recently. Amid tensions that have risen in the weeks following the ouster of West African nation's elected President Mohamed Bazoum, the administration's foreign ministry gave Ambassador Sylvain Ité 48 hours to leave Nigerian territory. According to Al Jazeera English, Niger's military rulers have ordered police to expel France's ambassador, a move that marks a further downturn in relations and one that French authorities say the army officers who seized power in Niamey last month had no authority to make. The leaders are following the strategy of military governments in neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso and distancing themselves from the region's former colonial power. Amid a wave of anti-French sentiment, the visas of French ambassador Sylvain Ité and his family have been cancelled and police have been instructed to expel the envoy, the military administration said in a statement dated recently and confirmed as authentic by its head of communications.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on RIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB, English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a question, which is very important. And this question is concerned with a topic that is one of the distinguishing beliefs of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt and the Shia. And that is the topic and issue of intercession and shafa'at. As you know, the Shia and the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, they believe that intercession and shafa'at is not solely the right of God, rather. God bestows the ability to intercede on people, like for example, the prophets, the imams, alayhi wasalam, and also other people as well, based on certain good deeds or characteristics that they might have. Certain people have been mentioned as having the ability to intercede on behalf of others in the hereafter. So today on the key, we're going to be looking at what is the criteria by means of which we can assess whether a certain person has the right to intercede on behalf of another person or not. The answer to this question is a believer's right to intercede and to intercession depends on the extent of his good deeds. The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "There are people from among the believers who have the right to intercession." Then the Prophet mentioned two people, singled out two specific individuals. He said, like Rabi'a and Mudhar. These were two people, probably two individuals at the time of the Prophet. The Prophet singled them out and mentioned them as having the right to intercede in the hereafter. Then the Prophet said, a believer has the right to intercede on behalf of at least 30 people. So here in this hadith, right, the Prophet mentioned two good people. And from this we can conclude that it depends on the extent of a person's deed. Imam Baqir alayhi salam said, a man intercedes on behalf of his tribe, for his family, or even just for two other people, depending on the extent of his deed. So this hadith is a little more explicit in explaining that the criteria for the right of intercession or the extent to which a person may intercede, all of this depends on the extent and the value. When we say extent, it doesn't mean necessarily the number of his deeds, but that value of that person's deed. Then in the end of this hadith, the Imam alayhi salam, he mentions why this is so. He says, فَذَلِكَ الْمَقَامُ الْمَحْمُودِ, for that is the glorious station. If you've read the Holy Quran, you know that there's a station mentioned in a degree or a level of virtue or perfection mentioned in it for the believers in the hereafter called the Maqam-e Mahmud. The Imam here, he says that this is that station of intercession or shafa'at given to people. And if you've read the Holy Quran, you know that this is a station given to people who perform the Namaz Shab or the Salatul Layl, the night prayers, which is a recommended prayers to be performed before the prayer of Fajr or the morning prayers. This indicates that this is a station which can be acquired through good deeds, and it depends on the value of the good deeds a person performs. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the extent to which a person can intercede and the criteria for the intercession of a person based on and in light of the prophetic hadith. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.